Welcome to the Modern Masculinity Podcast, where we delve into the depths of what it means to be a man in today's world, and we explore the real-life challenges and triumphs that you and I face every single day. My name is Hector Santi Esteban, and I come with no answers, only questions for some of the most wise, insightful, and grounded men that I know. So get settled in. You're listening to Modern Masculinity. Fellas, what's going on? I hope this episode finds you well. And I hope this episode leaves you better than when it found you. And as always, I'm honored and grateful, humbled to be a part of your journey, and excited that I get to be a part of yours. Today's episode is with Markham Rollins, and he's the newly published author of The Evolving Man, and someone who's just someone who I look to, and in a number of decades, I hope to have as much energy and vigor and life that this guy has. And one of the reasons that I'm excited to bring this conversation to you is that this show is for guys who are currently in it. And some of the guys that we bring on perhaps may have a couple of steps further along the path, right? They just might be a couple of ladder rungs past where we're at, not even above or below, but just past. And so I think that today's conversation is really a great glimpse and some great insights from guys who have been walking that path for a while and been doing it in an environment where it hasn't always been the norm to think and act the way they think and act. And so I'm excited to bring this to you, newly published author of The Evolving Man, Mr. Markham Rollins. Markham, welcome to the Modern Masculinity Podcast. Thanks for being here.
I'm so excited to spend a little time with you today. I really can't wait.
We always start the podcast off with having the guests take us into their world because you just published a book. We were talking about the pre-sales have gone well and things are great. But even then, I mean, the work never ends. So take us into your world and what are some of the challenges that you as a man, a husband, a partner, a business owner, an author, like what are some of the challenges that you're dealing with today?
You said we only have an hour? Yeah. Take 3 hours. You know, I'm 66 years old. I am a serial entrepreneur. I spent 38 years working in the family business. It was an insurance agency in Westchester County, New York, which is just outside of New York City. I worked for my dad, who was a Marine. That was certainly some challenging times, but a lot of responsibility in running the business. I did it with my brother, Chuck, and then we ultimately sold it and went through a divorce, went through a lot of personal growth, remarried to an amazing woman who has 3 daughters and I have 3 sons. So we're a modern day Brady Bunch. We both retired the same day, the end of December in 2018. And the year before that, we were semi-retired and really struggled with that whole process of retiring and pivoted and started to really work on ourselves. And we worked on 5 parts of our lives, our physical wellness, our mental wellness, our relationships with people and our relationship together. And then this thing called wisdom sharing, because we were still young, but retired, but wanted to do something. And we ended up creating a whole new life for ourselves that is blossoming and doing really well. And it actually turned into a business. So my wife and I have a YouTube channel called Retirement Transformed. And that's been going for almost 3 years now. We've got 33,000 subscribers, almost 3 million views of our videos. And we come on every week for one 10-minute video, one 45-minute to an hour-long video talking about everything in retirement. Non-financial. And then there's my book that was just born and sent out into the world Friday night. So it's all pretty fresh.
Yeah. Well, congrats on the book, by the way. I know that's a big feat and something that I think you got it right on the cusp. You slid in safely with the AI sort of thing. You know, a lot of the books now in the future will be, there'll be an asterisk, like a Barry Bonds asterisk, because it might have been juiced up with AI, but you probably slid in right there to still get all the credit. And so I don't know if I will be able to say that same thing. So I know there's a lot that goes into that. I'm excited to get into how guys, you know, most of our listeners are, they're 30 something year olds, they're 40 something year old. And I think the idea of retirement is so far away from their mind because I think that they're financially not really in a place quite yet because they're just kind of figuring things out. But I think also their concept of retirement and what we were sold as retirement, because we came of age where we were told to go to school and get a degree and get a good job and the white picket fence and that sort of thing. And you retire at 65 and you ride off into your golden years. So that's our ideal. And we're coming of age and realizing that I don't know if that's the reality anymore. Or maybe there are some people who are living that. But I think my grandma, she worked until she was 80 something years old. Partially because she wanted to, but partially because she had to for a large reason as well. I'm curious what your definition of retirement or the ideal of retirement is, because I have a feeling that it's probably a little different than the traditional retirement sense or what people might think of typically doing after they retire.
It's an amazing question, because that really is what led Jody and I to start this business, because the retirement I was sold is the one that you just talked about, traditional retirement, which is what my parents did. You know, we bought the business from our dad when he turned 65, and he went to Florida with my mom, and he got down there and he played golf 3 days a week with his buddies, and he'd have a couple of drinks, they'd have lunch, he'd go home, take a nap, wake up, have another drink, take my mom to dinner, and, you know, he was in bed by 9 o'clock. And he did that for 15 years. And he lost his identity. He lost his purpose. He lost a huge community of people. It's a big deal when you leave your business. You lose your identity of who you've spent all this time. Like, you're the podcaster guy. So that's your identity. And then when you reach 60 or 65, you might do something completely different, but you also might just stop. But if you stop, gosh, it's really hard to reinvent yourselves. And there's no training for that. And I truly believe that my wife, Jody, and I, and a handful of other influencers today are on the cusp of helping change the perception of what retirement is. And I will tell you, and I tell my sons, I have three sons, they're 34, 37, and 40, almost 40. They should keep doing what they're doing, but around about 50, 55, 60, whenever they're ready, is start thinking about doing the thing that they were really meant to do, that they were called to do. Now, some people find that at a young age, and that's cool. But you do want to have a certain amount of financial nest egg so that you can not have to be forced to work. But I truly believe, I'm 66, and I truly believe I'll live to 100. That's a long time to be retired. That's a long time to do nothing. A lot of people end up doing nothing. The average number of hours that people over the age of 65 spend watching TV is 38 hours a week. I mean, that's a full-time job, and you're on the couch and you're not moving. So yeah, it's critical for all your listeners, your 30, 40 year olds. Enjoy the ride right now, but keep thinking about what it is that you're called to do. And it's that little voice inside of you that pops up once in a while. And you say, nah, I'm not going to do that. Listen, I started a YouTube channel. That voice never showed up until just before we started it. But I was an insurance agent, and I thought for sure I would spend the rest of my life in that industry, mentoring salespeople, becoming an insurance consultant. Yeah, but no, I just stepped away from that. And while I was in it, I loved it. But that really prepared me for what I'm doing now.
Yeah, I can't speak for everybody. I'm probably abnormal, but I don't see a time where I would stop, at least in my head when I said, like, I would never stop working. But I also have a very strong sense of aligning my work with my calling. So for me, when you say that, I'm like, no, it's actually not about the work part. It's actually about the doing what I feel I'm meant to do. And for me, that's talking. Maybe no one listened to me when I was younger. And so now all of a sudden I have a podcast so that I can just talk, and people, I don't want to say they're forced to listen, but maybe they can enjoy it. But I think that's something that guys now have the opportunity to do, is to create, whether it's a business or, I mean, it's most likely going to be a business, but some sort of lifestyle that allows them to participate in their calling while still sustaining a living, and sustaining a living that they're excited about, and sustaining a living that is something that is perhaps even an ideal.
You know, I think what it comes down to is I feel very strongly about the fact that I spent a very long time building my company, several other companies, started a couple of nonprofits. I like to build stuff. And that was all meant, again, for experience and knowledge. But that really wasn't my calling. That wasn't really what God wanted me to do. It just, I did it because, you know, I was in the family business and I was good at it and I got really good at it. I perfected my craft. I spent a lot of time learning how to run a business and how to sell insurance and how to convince people that we built a better mousetrap. And that's all fun and exciting. But, you know, when you put your head down at night on the pillow, it's kind of like, what did I really do? Well, now I'm in the business of serving others. So we do it on our YouTube channel and we have people all over the world that leave comments. Oh my God, you guys are great. God, I watched this video and helped my husband and I sit down and actually have a conversation that we've never had before. So I'm so grateful that we watched your video. That's awesome. And it's not about making a lot of money. It doesn't make a lot of money. Maybe one day it will, but it's really helping your fellow human being become better human beings. And that's the premise of the book too. The Evolving Man, Life Virtues Men Don't Talk About. I think when men read the book, they're going to really start to think more about themselves as humans and how to become a better human. And that, Hector, all leads towards, like you said, your vision, your passion, your calling. People listen to you. I listen to a bunch of your podcasts. I think they're great. You're interesting. You're a good talker and gives me a chance to slow down and to just think about what's going on in my life. So I'm grateful that we bumped into each other.
Yeah. And I'm excited. I mean, the show is a great thing selfishly, but these conversations tend to be, let's call it situationally therapeutic. They always seem to come at the right moment. And I would hope that it's happening. And the same is for the listeners. At least that's an intention that I set. For you with the book, I love the title. One of the premises of our show is really helping people to, I think integrate is probably the best word, because there is the old school way of looking at the masculine, which was very machismo, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sylvester Stallone sort of thing. And then it flipped the other way where now it turned into Mr. Nice Guy and very passive and happy wife, happy life sort of thing. Now we're trying to find some sort of balance and kind of integrate it. And it seems like you've also stumbled upon that as well, where you're not suggesting to create a life where you are working and you're grinding until your last day, but also the other side of it where you're just sitting on the couch 40 hours a week or playing golf or just going out to dinner and not dealing with anything of purpose, perhaps, is just as, I don't want to say devastating, but is perhaps just as catastrophic. So I guess the question in that, if there is one, is if someone were to read the book, what do you think would be they'd be most surprised by in terms of the lessons that you're suggesting? Or what might be the not so obvious ones that are in the book?
For me, growing up with my dad, who was an alcoholic, by the way, and a Marine, a tough guy, I remember as a kid, you know, when I would, I don't know, get hurt or get sad or whatever, and I'd cry, he'd always say to me, listen, stop crying, or I'm going to give you something to cry about. And there's so many men. When I wrote this book, I actually emailed 150 men over 18-week period and emailed them 4 journaling questions on each of the topics that are in the book to get their answers. So I didn't write this alone. I wrote this with 150 other men. So I've got a couple hundred of their responses in there on vulnerability, listening, kindness, compassion, sex and intimacy, marriage, because none of this stuff is easy and none of this stuff is really taught. I mean, I was taught by my dad the way he knew. I mean, he was very prejudiced. So I grew up in a prejudiced household. I've dialed that back a lot. My sons have dialed it back even more. And I love how it's evolved and how I'm open to growth and change. I think, to answer your question, I think the biggest thing men will realize when they read the book is, yeah, I need to change in many of these areas. And I can't change in all of them overnight because there's 18 life virtues in there. But I can certainly start on a journey of becoming a better human being, that in turn makes me or them a better dad, a better husband, a better wife, a better son. And what happens is then it affects the people around you. I have buddies that don't even talk to their wives. I mean, they're just jerks, you know, and their relationship is bad. You know, it's terrible. It doesn't need to be like that. And you don't need to cash in your chips. So I think that the first step for anything like that is just, you know, listening to your podcast and thinking, gosh, you know, I learned something new today. And I think if I implement that, I'll become a better person. I'm very proud of the fact that I was an Eagle Scout, or I am an Eagle Scout. I had to get 21 merit badges and all of that between the ages of 10 and 18 years old. And I was very vulnerable at that time. And I had the most amazing scoutmaster that really led me down this path. And the book is like that. So it's a modern day manual for men on how to become a better man, how to become a better husband, how to become a better dad.
Yeah. I posted a video the other day saying exactly that. We today can't really look to our fathers and previous generations as a model in the sense of the way they did things is just not going to work. It's not sustainable. I mean, some of it is cancelable. Some of it is illegal. You know, like I was just talking with a friend the other day, and their parents, they're my age, so this is in the 90s, would still rub whiskey on their gums, you know, to get them to their bed. And it's like, today, that's unheard of, right? The times have changed. And that's a small, obvious example. But the challenge is that the more subtle mindsets and perspectives and belief systems that are underlying that programming that aren't obvious can really be damaging if not brought to the surface and not sort of dealt with. So I think that for a lot of guys, they're now waking up, they're going up the levels of life, they're having kids, they're getting married, they're going through life challenges, and they're leaning on the old programming. That system is breaking. The old system is kind of breaking. And along with all of the, whether it's relationships or health, or in some instances, some people, we see guys deciding to take their lives. And it's like, all of these things are breaking down because they don't have the right, they don't have the tools yet to be able to navigate those sort of situations.
Well, I think there's two things. They don't have the tools and the guidance and the new way to do things, but they also don't have community. The book was written in a way that I tell the reader that you're not alone. When you look at the men's responses to some of these journaling questions, it's the same answer that you have. And they're struggling. They're really struggling. And the book is put together with, I kind of call out listening. I tell a story from my life where I learned a lesson on listening. And then there's four journaling questions. And then the men that helped me write it, you can see two, three, or four answers to those questions. And then the reader has an opportunity to do those journaling questions themselves. And then I end with a challenge. You know, I push the reader to find ways, and I give them tools and questions to ask to become a better listener, to become vulnerable, to become more compassionate, to learn how to forgive, to be more grateful. These are all tools. These are virtues that if you can begin to change and move towards that, you're more at peace, you're happier, people around you are happier. I mean, my dad carried around regrets, couldn't forgive anybody. I mean, if you screwed my dad, as he would put it, you're on his shit list forever. And he took a lot of that stuff with him to the grave. I remember in our business, we had four guys, four salespeople that left. We found out about it just before they left. They took business, they stole business, they hired some people away. And this was one of my best friends. It was devastating. At first, I was really like crushed. But my dad never forgave them, would never talk to them, wanted to sue them, wanted to take them to court. If I ever brought one of their names up, he just would go crazy. So that's not a way to go through life. That's hard. I mean, if you're carrying around regrets, or you're carrying around people you're associated with and you can't forgive them, if you can't forgive yourself, that's the first step. I mean, you got to forgive yourself for your sins and the mistakes you made. But then you forgive other people because it's just heavy weight that we don't need. It's carrying around garbage. I'm oversimplifying it, but I think it's important that while we're here, be happy, be funny, be light, be cheerful, make it easy on ourselves. Easy's okay.
Yeah. One of the things that's the idea of the title of the book is The Evolving Man. I think it's a great title because, I mean, for me, my personal theme, when I think about what am I like, evolution is what I've, if you were to take everything away, I'd get up and I'd try to still help evolve humanity. That's part of what, you know, our shows are all about. as men, I think the part of our evolution is being able to integrate and balance. And I think that there was so much of the hardcore masculine, and then we talked about it kind of swinging the other way. What do you find is helpful in helping people to wake up to the fact that there is some sort of middle? Because I think that I feel like the people coming into retirement, maybe they have to relax a little more. They might have to get into their feminine a little bit more, if you will. They might want to relax. They might need to enjoy things a little more. They might need to rest or whatever it may be. Whereas I think a lot of the guys my age, the evolution for them is, and I'm, once again, I'm projecting, so push back if this analysis is off, but for a lot of guys that are in their 30s and even younger, they're learning to draw their boundaries. They're learning to stand up for themselves, to have a voice. So many of us were raised in this female-driven sort of environment, both at home and at schools. And so we looked to them to make the decisions. And all of a sudden, we get into our relationships and we're doing the same thing and it's not working out. And so I guess, do you think that there's a similar evolution generationally, or are we kind of evolving perhaps conversely, if you will?
It's really clear to me, my two grandfathers, my dad, my first father-in-law, myself, my peers, and now I've got my sons and their circle of friends who are between 30 and 40. And it's definitely changed and evolved. And I think that I'm fortunate. I believe I'm fortunate in that I've always had an open mind to explore my feelings. I'm a big journaler. I like to write things down. I like to write what's on my mind. I like to talk to people. I like to ask a lot of questions. I like to grow. I read a lot of books. But, you know, at 66, I've kind of settled down a little bit. I mean, I'm still got this entrepreneur bug and the YouTube channel is doing great. And we're spending about 10 hours a week on that. I played golf this morning with Jody and her stepfather, who's down here. I'm down in Florida. He came down and we played golf this morning. And then I worked for an hour before this. Now I'm doing this. I've got a really wonderful, balanced life right now. It's so friggin' exciting. I have the most amazing morning routine. And for me, the most exciting part of my day is when I go to bed, because I get so excited for tomorrow. Because today was great. Tomorrow's going to be better. And that's mindset. You know, I could easily say today sucked and tomorrow, geez, I got to do this. I got to do that. It's just really being true to yourself, understanding your feelings, understanding your limitations, working hard on growing, working hard in your relationship with your wife and your kids. It's important. Listen, I learn a lot from my kids. My youngest son is one of my best mentors. I mean, I'm totally open and honest with him, and he's open and honest with me. And I don't always agree with him, but I want to hear what he has to say, because he represents the next generation of young men who are trying to evolve a step further away from me to get better. So I can learn from him, and I can learn from the 90-year-olds. So I think it's having this open mindset of really learning and being open to exploring everything and anything. Now, at 40, you know, maybe you don't have the capacity to do that yet. There's still work and you got the kids and you have the house and you want to get the next house. There's a lot of that I remember going through. But now at my stage, that's kind of behind me. So now it's all about just these next 30 years are just going to be friggin' amazing.
Yeah, it reminds me of this video I saw where they talked about, I've been watching a lot of jiu-jitsu videos, and this is what pops up on my algorithm when I do end up scrolling. They're talking about how some of the most successful jiu-jitsu players or fighters are also some of the kindest people and the most present fathers and the compassionate partners. And their point was that to know that level of aggression, you have to know the other side too, that there's a balance to it. And I feel like too many guys grew up out of balance, where they were either too passive. We saw the previous generation, and we saw, you know, we don't want to be Rambo. We don't want to be violent. We don't want to be anything associated with that. Let's go hard the other way, as opposed to integrating it and, not throwing the baby out with the bathwater, which is what we were kind of like looking back on it, subtly told that aggression is bad and violence is bad and being physical and roughhousing is bad. And if you roughhouse with your friends, it's somehow going to end up, you're going to end up in jail. Like, I remember thinking that. Like if you were like rough with your friends and you got like you fought that you were going to end up a convict.
Yeah. I didn't go through that. I mean, I do remember in high school, I was hanging out with a lot of guys, back then when I was in high school. And again, I told you my dad was an alcoholic, so he encouraged drinking at a young age. So I was drinking beer at 14 and I was going into bars at 16 because the drinking age was 18. But back then you go to a bar and you get hammered. You get in your car and you drive home. And if you got pulled over, the cop would say, okay, let me see your license. All right, I know where you live. Follow me home. So I'd get back behind the wheel again, drunk, and drive home. And he'd knock on the door, wake my parents up and say, your son's been out drinking. You got to straighten him out. That's not the way it is today. We seem to have gotten away with a lot more back then. And there's more rules and laws now. And if you don't follow them, like you said, you're going to end up in trouble. I was never the violent kid. It's funny. I was on your Instagram before we jumped on and I saw a video of maybe it was one of your kids, but you were promoting jiu-jitsu and they were playing, looked like they were playing dodgeball. When I was a kid, I was not an athlete at all. I was the last kid picked for dodgeball or baseball or whatever it is. One of my buddies would say, I'll take him. But I wasn't a good athlete. I wasn't a smart kid. I was a C-plus student. And despite all that, I became very successful. And despite my dad being a drunk and me easily becoming a drunk as well, I didn't go down that road. Someone's looking after me and I made some better decisions than he did.
Well, we can only hope to make better decisions. Yeah, I mentioned that I posted a video that I can't look to previous generations. And the ending to that story, which I never got around to because I tend to ramble, was that I realized also how much I didn't realize that he was doing as well. And I had to apologize to him because I don't know if he saw it or whatever, but I told him the next time I saw him, I said, like, I don't know if I ever say like, thank you often, but like, yeah, I posted this video and it might have talked about some of the shortcomings that you had, but also as like a dad or a father, but also there were so many things that he did well and that he did provide and that we didn't have to worry about. And we always lived in a good area and we had a good house and, there was food. Like in terms of the provider and the provision space, he knocked it out of the park. Could he have been a little more emotionally available as a parent? Perhaps, right? But it's like generationally speaking, he was no more available than his dad, I'm sure. And so it's like, we're all trying to get better than our parents, but they're all coming from where they're at and what they saw and what they knew. And they didn't have the access to the experiences that we have. But I also think that as men, we can look at that and not say, well, like for a long time, I just said, our family's diabetic. It just runs in our family. I remember just saying that, like, it just runs in our family because we said it so much. My mom said it. My grandma said it runs in our family. I said, F that. Like, no, it's because you guys are eating sugar all the time and you're drinking soda all the time. And it's like, no, it does not have to run in our family. We can change our habits and we can change it and thus change, our health. And who knows, maybe I'll be eating my words and the diabetic monster will prevail, but I'm going to choose not to live in that sort of stuck mindset, which I think I've seen so many people get stuck in.
My wife and I just did a video on YouTube entitled Sugar Will Kill You. And you're right. There's so much information now on things like that. Again, if you're curious enough and you really want to live longer and healthier, you can absolutely change the way you live and how you live and how long you live. You have complete control over it. I guess that's the one thing I would have done differently. If I look back 30 years, I would have taken better care of myself. But right now I take great care of myself. I give myself the best care. There's a chapter in the book on self-care, and it's so friggin' important to really take care of yourself so that you're there for everybody else. But I want to go back to your talking about your dad. My thing on my dad was he did the best he could with what he had. And that, for me, is a simple way to look at what he did. It doesn't help to be critical of who he was and what he did. He should have done this, should have done that. He did the best he could with what he had. And I'm doing the best I can with what I have. The difference is I'm working every day on myself to get better. He didn't do that. He was a Marine. He was tough. You do it. This is the way you do it. You don't need to do it any other way. This is the way you do it. All that other stuff you're reading about is bullshit. Scotch on the gums will stop the baby from teething. Oh, Dad, we're not doing it. And, you know, I actually kept my kids away from my dad for 3 years because of his drinking. He started to tell them stories. He started to tell them dirty jokes. And these kids are 4, 6, and 8. And I didn't need them to have that. And I write about that in the book. That was a really, really hard discussion to have with my dad. But I still loved him unconditionally for who he was the whole time. And I told him that. But you can't be around my kids right now because it's not safe. He didn't really understand it. But I think at the end, he finally did. But we have to be careful with things like that. We have to look out for ourselves and our spouses and our kids.
Yeah, one of my favorite books is Carol Dweck's book, Mindset. I think that was a pivotal book for me. And I've gone through these levels of judgment and acceptance and forgiveness. But that was a big thing when I'm coming up as a 18, 19-year-old and young 20-something and thinking that I know it all and that my parents, how could they, casting all this blame. That was a big thing that at least I'm trying to expose to my kids is this growth mindset. This mindset that you're not stuck in who you are and that your circumstances do not dictate your success. And that for me was something that I remember growing up feeling like my lot was cast, that this was where it was and you are where you're at and that's where you're at. But I think that future generations are kind of seeing, and obviously with education and information, that more and more is possible. And hopefully that can be part of the evolution of where man is going, is to be able to kind of expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the whole idea of a limiting mindset versus a growth mindset, that one item is the difference between an amazing life and an average life. I mean, I really do. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, let me think, maybe it was even 7 years ago, I was in the middle of selling my company and I was so stressed out. I mean, beyond words, I wasn't sleeping, I was sick. And I was seeing this naturopath doctor, and she said to me over an 18-month period, finally, I don't know, it was April of maybe 2013 or 2012. She said, and this is the third time she told me in 18 months, you need to start meditating. And I said, I'm not going to meditate. It's just not something I'm going to do. And she gave me two examples of two women who are clients of hers who were near on the verge of committing suicide. They started meditating. And it saved their lives. And I thought, well, you know what? I'm going to try it. And she told me about an app, Headspace, download it and just try it. So I downloaded it that night. The next morning, I got up and I meditated for 10 minutes. Hardest thing I ever did to try to sit there and listen to a guided meditation and not be thinking about, I got to do this. I have to do that. I got to write this down. I mean, it was the hardest thing that I've ever learned how to do in my life. And if you had asked me the day before I started, would you do it? I said, absolutely not. But I've been meditating now almost every day for 10 minutes for 7 years. And I can't imagine not meditating. I can't imagine anybody not meditating. I totally believe everybody should meditate. That's how strongly I feel about it. I don't know anybody who meditates who says, God, I really should stop this. It's not helpful. It's the people that don't have an open mindset to think, no, I don't need that. So I'm opinionated about that for sure, but that's that growth mindset to be able to try it and believe that it'll help.
Guys should have some sort of contemplative practice. I think there's less and less stigma today, but there was a stigma about it not being manly to meditate. I'm reminded of that warrior in the garden quote, you know, something to the effect of, I'd rather be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in war or gardener in a battle, something to that effect.
Yeah.
A realization that I had was that I kind of demonized violence and aggression to the point where it resulted in me not having boundaries, and it resulted in me avoiding conflict and running away from conflict and from being a pacifist and Mr. Nice Guy and all the sorts and thinking that's the ideal and, oh, guns are bad, like the whole sort of thing. And I just think it's an evolution. It's an evolution for guys to be able to integrate it. There's some sort of integration. And that's why, like this morning, I got up and I trained jiu-jitsu and we got it out on the mat. And it's like, I'm in such a better mood. I'm so much calmer. I'm so much more balanced because I'm able to have that aggression that it allows to be able to swing back the other way. And I don't know that enough guys are tapping into practices like meditation, like breath work, like mindfulness or cold plunging, or, yeah, you know, there's all these things that kind of help someone to kind of get to that space a little bit.
And yeah, and you're right. And it's the men that take the step into that, I'm not going to call it a battlefield, but they take the step into that world of evolving, of trying things, of becoming more at peace with themselves. I'm an early bird. I get up at 4 o'clock every day and I'll do my meditation. I do a little bit of reading. I head to the gym at 4:45 and I work out from 5 to 5:45, come back, have coffee with my wife for half an hour, and then she goes to the gym. And this morning routine that we have, like you said, you were on the mat this morning. I mean, if I don't get to go to the gym first thing in the morning, I'm not going to go. And if I don't go, I just feel like I skipped the day. Like the day's not going to be as good as it is today because I went to the gym at 4:45 this morning. Like you feel great. Just changes your attitude. It changes your mindset. And if you can throw in some meditation or cold plunge and eating better. I mean, I used to eat so poorly and I always felt like crap because of it. I have an Oura ring and my wife has one and we track our sleep and our oxygen level and our heart rate. And in the morning we get up and, you know, how did you sleep? What's your readiness score? It gives us a gauge to force us to, again, go to bed on time, get up early, do the exercise, because our numbers show it. And if I don't drink, if I did have a glass of wine and a steak for dinner, my numbers are terrible. I'm not going to sleep well. So why do that to my body anymore? And I spent years drinking lots of wine and eating lots of steak. And I never knew why I was sluggish and tired and all of that. So really starting to be aware of how you feel, I think is important too, Hector. You know, people, they just go from day to day to day to day to day. And, you know, they complain and they're tired and they don't feel well and they're cranky. It's really time to wake up. And no matter what age you're at, start paying attention to how you feel, how you make other people feel. There's this most amazing quote from, oh my God, I hope I get it right, Maya Angelou. Says, people won't remember what you did. People won't remember what you said, but people will remember how you made them feel. And if you can go through life with your wife or husband or kids or friends and make them all feel better about themselves every day, you're golden.
I'm reminded of this image that David Data talks about in his book, The Way of the Superior Man, where he describes masculinity. And we could remove gender, right? But in a simplest sense, that men are like the boat and the feminine is more like the ocean. And what it reminds me of is that we, in service, are leading people somewhere. That it is our role as men to lead. I had really lost that. Once again, I love my mom, but she wore the pants. So I grew up thinking that's the ideal and to live in that sort of model. And it took a breaking down. It took a lot of waking up to see outside of that. But all that to say that, like, this in service of people, all these sorts of things, that if we don't do it, the repercussions bubble up eventually. These sorts of things start to bubble up, whether it's through lack of purpose, whether it's through the relationship decaying, or there are all these kinds of symptoms that happen from men not doing what it is that you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this idea of service to others is really important. And I'm getting more and more into that. For, gosh, 15 years, I led groups of men and women down to Nicaragua to build homes in a remote part of that country. And we'd go down there for a week and we would sleep on cots with mosquito nets. We'd eat rice and beans 3 times a day. We'd take a bucket shower, use a latrine. But for 5 days, we'd get up early in the morning and put on a pair of jeans and a shirt, and we would go work with a family and build them a brand new home next to their tar paper shack that they've lived in for 4 generations. When it rains, there's no floor, so just water comes rushing through. Yet these people down there, they dress like we do. I mean, they wear pants and shirts and they go to work. They get paid $3 a day to work in a factory or in the fields. But we would build a brand new house out of concrete block and steel, a tile floor, a tin roof. And for them, they felt like God himself brought us down there. But their world was transformed in 5 days, like nothing you can imagine. The trip cost $1,500. The house cost $5,000. I mean, there's not an amount of money that someone could give me that would change my life as much as that $5,000 house changed the life of that family and their neighbors and the future family. And that's a major service to others role. And you can do it in a very small way, holding a door open for someone, helping someone out, working in a food bank. But we need to do more of that as a society. There's a lot of people that are down on hard luck, whatever it might be. And I think we have a responsibility to help our fellow human beings as much as we can. I don't know if that followed your path, but it resonated with me when you said service to others.
Yeah, it's a great way to kind of wrap things up and sum it up, because I think that's the evolution and the integration of the masculinity, that there was, let's call it the older generation, which was very much independently minded. It somehow got very switched. The Homer Simpson, the Tim the Toolman Taylor sort of era, which was very family oriented, sure. But to our point earlier, I think there was not an integration. There was a lack of that. And I think that you're speaking to the service that's perhaps missing in both things. The book is out. Definitely by the time that you're listening to this, it's called The Evolving Man, Life Virtues Men Don't Talk About. Is that right?
That's right.
Where can people get that? Or if they want to get more from you and get deeper in your world, where should they go for that?
I have a website, markhamrollins.com. The book is on Amazon and hardcover, ebook, and paperback. My wife and I have the other business, Retirement Transformed, if any of your listeners are a little bit older. But honestly, a lot of what Jody and I do online crosses any generation. It's not just about retiring, but it's really just about, we have a little more time in retirement, but just living a much better, more fulfilling life. So certainly enjoy today. And I hope the listeners will take a minute to take a look at the book on Amazon and buy it and do some of the work that's in there. It ends up, the very last chapter is legacy. And I give the reader an exercise to go through that. I give them a really good framework. And I ask them to write a letter from their 90-year-old self to them today. So that letter is to thank you today for everything you're going to do between today and when you're 90. And it's a really cool exercise. And I read that letter that I wrote a couple of years ago once a month, but it reminds me of the core values that I have and what I want to do for the next 30 years.
Yeah, I love it. It's really cool to see what you're doing. And I'm excited to see what you will do with this movement that you're creating. We'll link up all that in the show notes. And for all of you who have stuck with us, we appreciate you being here. We would love and be forever grateful for a rating or review wherever you get your podcasts. And if you know a guy who needs to hear this, or anybody who really should be hearing this, hit that share button and send him a message. Let them know you were thinking about him. But we're grateful and humbled that you'd spend some time with us today. We'll see you on the next one. Later, fellas.